Hello, this is Tim again, and another round of Mirage Profiles. And this time I'm talking to Martin Lucina. Hello, Martin.
Hi, Tim.
So, Martin, you are also one of those who made it to Marrakesh. Is this your first time here?
It's my second time here, actually. So the first time I was here in just the previous iteration in March this year.
Mm-hmm. You liked it so much that you came again.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Let's have a look at what you do. I mean, when did you start programming?
I started programming as a child. So back around when I was around 8 or something like that. I originally started with BASIC on something like a little sharp pocket computer. I don't know if you ever seen those. It looks like an
1700 thingies, the small pocket calculator style.
Yeah, those ones. So I originally started with BASIC on that. Mm-hmm. At the time, I had a friend of my father's who was kind of lightly teaching me programming, and eventually we outgrew the BASIC on that, so he somehow managed to get like a assembly manual for this thing, for the whole microprocessor from Sharp in Japan.
You could do program them in assembly.
Yes, you could. I mean, so it was the usual, you know, poke to this offset.
Yes.
And then call and something happens.
All right.
Or not. Yeah, and then from there I moved on to PCs, and fairly quickly, I suppose the next language I learned was probably Turbo Pascal. You know, the old Turbo Pascal 3.
The good times.
Yeah.
Borland, fast compilers.
Yeah.
More or less the first modern development environments that could be really called a development environment. I think that's what Borland really excelled in and sort of was a prototype for many other systems of that kind.
Yeah, definitely. So, and it was amazingly fast and small, even for those times. So, yeah, it would have been the first IDE that I used, which is kind of interesting since after that, as I moved into the Linux world, that was the first Unix-like system that I used. I guess I then went back to VI.
I know that feeling.
but I've been happily working with the command line in VI since. So maybe you don't need an IDE. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not decided on that. I mean, it might be helpful if you're more in the application world where you have to deal with a lot of complex frameworks and things other people are providing you. But I think if you're systems oriented, you kind of like it to be bare and only things that don't need so much extra stuff on top are probably worth looking into, because otherwise they are too complex to begin with. So when have you ever scratched the surface on functional programming too?
So I've had very limited exposure to that. I played around a little bit with Lisp at some point, but then I guess the only other really functional programming language that I've tried is OCaml.
Mm-hmm.
And given that most of the work I've done in between those tries comes back to C and mainly to imperative languages, I've still found that even the limited exposure that I've had to functional programming has, like, it's broadened my way of how I think about writing code, and I've found some of those styles kind of leaking a little bit into the C code that I write.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I still have a way to travel that in that direction, and I should do that because I have the feeling that it will broaden my horizons in terms of how I write software even more.
I think, it's interesting to see that almost everybody I've been talking to here, and I think this is probably valid for most of those who are attending here, are kind of early adopters of programming in general, and also have a certain experience with programming in general that they make appreciate what functional programming is actually bringing to the table, that they see that this is kind of influencing the way they think about software and how they model software themselves, that is sort of solving all those issues that we might have learned to deal with, you know, because we've been exposed to it all the time, but then again don't really care so much that it's constantly bugging us, and why not doing it differently? I think that's a common meme here. So, but your work, I mean, your interest or what you bring into this community is something else called Solar 5, which is related to VMs. So can you explain what your approach to this topic has been, and what Solar 5 in particular is?
Okay, so the background to this is that I started working with unikernels, I guess, back before even the unikernel term had been widely popularized. And the way that happened is I was doing some projects with something called Rump Kernels, which is a project that comes from NetBSD, which is a way of essentially turning the NetBSD kernel into a library OS. And then you can use these components in various ways, right? So you can reuse unmodified kernel functionality, either drivers, file systems, the networking stack, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
And
leave out stuff that you don't know.
Yes.
That you don't need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's correct. And then I did some successful projects with just using the Rump kernel components. And at the time I realized that, hey, I mean, you know, we have VMs, we have virtualization, but everyone's basically just virtualizing all these machines in the classic sense, right? So you always take your whole machine with your entire operating system and all the things running on it. And at the end of the day, you just want it to perform some function, right? Run some service or something. So the insight I had there was, well, hey, you know, why can't we just basically trim this down and run nothing except the components that we need and inside a VM? So that's kind of where I started going down this path. And I guess since then, the path to Solar 5 has been one of increasing minimization. So I like minimal solutions to problems, right? And it's been going down that path of, how much more stuff can we throw out, right? How much more stuff can we leave out just to get the basics that we need? And also at the same time, how much of that we can use to simplify the environment that the unikernel runs in as seen from the host. And so the way Solar 5 came about is I was doing some work with Mirage OS and Rump Run, and Dan Williams at IBM Research basically came up with the original idea of Solar 5 and did some initial simple implementation, which was kind of a little bit hacky on the Mirage side, but it showed the first concepts. And then at the time, I thought, hey, this is really nice. And I just basically started helping him to productize it more, to make it work better with Mirage, to actually push it towards a release. And at the same time, exploring the key concepts that he had started with.
Mm-hmm. So basically, we're talking about some kind of glue code that sits in between the unikernel, which wants to access its host environment.
Yep.
But which minimizes this interface to the host environment to a much smaller set of instructions as you would normally find in a VM world, which is, I don't know how many interfaces are usually there. I mean, when I'm targeting something like Rump Run or Zen or whatever, what's the number you would say, a number of interfaces I would have to take care of?
So the biggest amount of code and the widest interfaces that are in there are all the various device drivers, right? So because VMs have still traditionally retained all that baggage of we want this thing to look like an entire machine, right? So when we're virtualizing something, we virtualize an entire PC, right? And we give it all these, you know, PCI buses and network cards and ACPI and all this stuff. But in the VM case, you actually have to write backend code that emulates all of this stuff, and that's where most of the bugs have been.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this stuff is generally used. You run QEMU, and QEMU code base is just huge, and there's lots of these different implementations of device drivers in it. So, with the Solo 5 approach, we've kind of taken a step back and said, okay, well, we have this hardware virtualization, right? And what is the minimal way to use this feature?
So basically going from what the CPU actually provides as a pure interface for virtualization.
Yep, that's correct.
The hypervisor itself.
Yep,
somehow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we say, okay, well, now we need some way, obviously, of communicating with the rest of the world, because otherwise the program is not very useful if it's just running in its own little thing and never talking to a user or anything. And we've tried to construct the most minimal but still useful interface to replace all of those device drivers and legacy stuff and so on.
Right. So is the approach? So I think the Solo 5 name refers to there only being 5 primitives to talk to it. Is that true?
I don't know. Dan came up with the name. There's a bit more than 5, but it's almost like...
Not many.
Yeah, not many. I mean, we're in the range of about, you know, 15 calls or something.
All right.
Not even that. Yeah.
So it's more Solo 15.
Yeah.
Okay. So what kind of abstraction is it actually providing? So like, what is the first thing you basically start talking to the CPU and saying like, "Hi CPU, it's me. Give me, I don't know, memory, a context to act on."
Yep.
Are you establishing a channel where you're sending messages up and down?
So the actual mechanism is not really message based in the kind of IPC sense. So the mechanism that we use to traverse out of the VT sandbox to the host is, at least on x86, what we do is we basically just marshal some arguments for this call. Say we're doing, like, you know, writes to a network, right? And we put those in a memory structure, and then we immediately use an instruction to cause the VM to exit back to the host.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the host side, we have some very small amount of almost no translation code that will just basically turn that write into a write syscall on the host. And then that completes, and we jump back into the VM. So it's almost like we, rather than the approach that's been used in existing hypervisors and in all the existing devices, where even the virtual devices that you have, like the virtual network cards and so on, they still look very much like a hardware thing, right? So you have, you know, you find it on this...
They're pretending to be hardware.
Yeah, they're pretending to be hardware, right? But to me, that just seems like, why do I go to all this complexity to pretend to be hardware when
there is no hardware?
There is no hardware.
Well, there might be hardware, but what if you go to a bare bones machine where there is actually nothing but the CPU and PCI devices that you actually have to talk to? What then?
Well, then that's outside of the scope of Solo 5, in the sense that the use case we're looking at is you're always going to be running on some kind of hypervisor.
Mm-hmm.
And there will be some other thing in there, like in the Zen case, it would be the DOM 0 or in the KVM or FreeBSD. It's like the host kernel.
So the idea is to have a very small interface to eject Mirage OS or other other uni kernels that are following the same approach, but I think it's mostly designed for Mirage right now, to be like a good citizen within an existing host environment that is virtualized. So within a Unix system, within KVM or other hypervisor systems.
Yeah, that's right. That was the initial kind of scope that we did. But then we realized that, first of all, that this interface actually lends itself really well to porting other kinds of Unix kernels onto it. So basically anything that uses cooperative multitasking, doesn't require interrupts, is fairly trivial to port to this. So we have, I think Ricardo from IBM has a working progress port of the IncludeOS unikernel, which is a C++ unikernel. Also kind of going backwards in history, he's also ported Rumfront to run on top of Solo 5. So the realization was that, yes, we have Mirage because we started with Mirage, and it's also, I think, the most active community that we're involved in, but we can extend this to run other kinds of unikernels. Right?
So if somebody would just like come up with a new idea, maybe using another language that is kind of like ML in the approach that it's like functional and you know, allows for this cooperative existence within a machine that doesn't need interrupts and such. So you could just like come up with a new concept for a unikernel, and then it's easy just by taking Solo 5 to get into any other existing system without spending hours and hours to implement a huge interface, which is basically just trying to pretend that there's hardware where there's none.
Yeah, that's right. And then also the next step that we had is we realized that you don't necessarily need to use, so that given the interface is so thin and its implementation is on the host is very well defined, you don't necessarily need to implement it only for hardware virtualization. So one of the things we're looking at in the future is we should also be able to implement this to run, for example, as a normal Linux process, but you still want some extra isolation from it. And the property of this interface is because we know exactly what calls we need to do on the host to implement it, we can basically use a hard whitelist of system calls, like using seccomp, right? So when we essentially set up the unikernel's execution environment, the process, we drop down to the most minimal amount of privileges that it needs, and then we run the unikernel using essentially a slightly different implementation of the Solo 5 interface. But as far as the unikernel is concerned, it still sees only those primitives that come from Solo 5.
So for Mirage, it's all the same.
Yeah.
So how have you experienced this this week here, your second time you've been here? What is coming out of this?
So the most useful part of it for me is that it's basically all the conversations I've had with many different people here, and also the other two Solo 5 folks that are working on Solo 5 at IBM, one of which I'd never met in real life, so that's great.
Something, yeah.
Yeah, and Dan I'd also seen last like a year and a half ago, so the most useful outcome is that we managed to sync up on what are our different plans for Solo 5. We've managed to write up a small text that says, you know, what is it useful for, and that means we get to be on the same page going forward.
All right. So, thanks for explaining this to me.
You're welcome. Anybody else? I hope I did a reasonable job. That you
did.
You understood the.
Yes, I understood it, and I'm pretty sure everybody else will understand it even better, because I'm still new to this whole unikernel and OCaml world. And well, if I can understand it, everybody can understand it.
Excellent. Good stuff.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.